You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Extra Time Radio here in New York City. Andrew Wiebe is still lost in the great plains of Kansas on his long trip back, his odyssey back from California, but I have returned from the Holy Land that is Mexico City, and I am joined by Matt Doyle. Matt, I'm sure you had a glorious sunny weekend. How's life?
I spent the entire weekend inside watching soccer, Gaspard. It's the same as it ever was here.
I like to ask you each week, because that one week when you throw me a curveball, I'm going to get really upset and be like, what, did you not watch soccer this weekend?
No, I will say this. For longtime MLSsoccer.com fans who might remember my old partner from the Scouting Report video series, Dan Hayek, he has moved back to America from Australia. So we had some pizza and some beers on Friday night. That was the highlight of my weekend. I didn't live it up in another country like you did. I followed you guys on Snapchat the entire time you were in Mexico City. I am becoming tech savvy in a millennial type of
way. Yeah, that's how you have to do it. I went to Mexico City, took a million pictures on Snapchat. I came home. Not a single piece of data was filled on my phone because they all disappear. My friends tried to kill me through the use of Oaxaca cheese and the massive amounts of cheese that they put on everything. But it was delicious. It was a great trip. And I got back on Friday night just in time for a lot of MLS action. The big games this last weekend, though, were on Sunday afternoon. Three games on Sunday. And Taylor Twellman was our host for one of them. Well, let's welcome him on now. ESPN talent coming out of KC after Sporting KC got a big win, breaking a little bit of news about Zlatan Ibrahimovic as well. We're so happy to have him on. Friend of the show, we consider, Taylor Twellman. Taylor, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, that may be the first time talent has ever been in front of my name, but I'll take it.
Hey, listen, you're the one who carries the show, especially for us. You're our big name, and we heard that down in KC, you know, hotel staff, restaurants, everyone treats you like a superstar.
let's just say for the last 38 hours of my life, for the first time in my life, I wasn't the fault of a problem. It wasn't my fault that the Marriott in downtown Kansas City lost my rental car. You can't make it up. They lost it. 9:45 in the morning, Sunday, before the game, I've got a SportsCenter hit. I go down, hand them my ticket. It's 10:15. It's 10:30. I go to the guy and said, hey, I've been waiting 45 minutes for my car. Is there an issue here? Manager comes around the corner with a few expletives and says, we lost a bleeping car. And I looked at him and said, sir, excuse me, whose car? Reads the ticket, 7290. I looked down and said, awesome, that's my car.
How do they lose a car? What does that even mean?
If I knew, think about it. If I knew, I wouldn't be telling you the story. I don't know how to describe this to you guys. I honestly have no idea how they lost it. Now, the reality is they did find the car about, I don't know, 10 hours later or so. I was flying back from Kansas City, had a couple voicemails where I landed in Boston at like 2 o'clock in the morning. But it is one of the more remarkable 24 hours of my life, I can tell you that.
So they took it out for a joyride? I mean, do you roll around?
Yeah,
when you travel, do you get yourself a Ferrari?
Yeah, I don't know if my Hyundai Sonata would have given you the same Ferris Bueller Day Off kind of ride, but who knows? Maybe it did.
All right, you know who has a Ferrari? Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Yes, he does.
Tell us about the Zlatan epic, because it looks like we're in the first chapter here. Recent reports now, just within the last hour, that he has received a contract offer from Manchester United, and we know MLS is interested as well.
Yeah, he's got three offers on the table from what I've gathered. Manchester United obviously is one of them. The other one is anywhere from 10 to 12 million net a year U.S. dollar from China. And obviously Major League Soccer. I think it's a huge statement that MLS is in this discussion, because you're not talking about a player. As much as Zlatan Ibrahimovic is older, guys, he's still a player that scored over 25-plus goals this year.
38.
In Europe. So you look at it and say, wait a minute, this guy can still play. So you are in that discussion. Here's the issue, though. Is that guy wants to play in L.A.? Well, at least his agent has made that known through different media outlets. And the reality is, as I said on our show on Sunday, is that's not possible in 2016. Now, that doesn't mean he will not play for the L.A. Galaxy. But as a designated player, you know, this discussion of MLS making rules for bigger clubs and whatnot, listen, if you can be very creative if you want a player in MLS, and that's the one thing I've gathered over the last 72 to 96 hours, guys, is that you talk to general managers and presidents of all different clubs, whether it's the highest spending club in MLS or it's the lowest spending club in MLS, it doesn't matter. You can be creative. It's just a matter of whether or not you want that player or want to be in that discussion. But the reality is right now is that if LA Galaxy is the only team Zlatan wants to play for, 2016 is going to be very difficult.
One of the stories that's come out is that Bocanegra went over for his final game in Paris, did a little work with beIN Sport. But there's talk of obviously a second LA team coming, as well as Atlanta, these expansion teams. Is there any chance that they sign him and do what NYCFC did with Villa and loan him out and try and find a way to extend his time until they become a franchise?
I mean, I do think there's a possibility. I'm not sure LAFC can sign him now and loan him out till 2018. I'm not sure that's what you really want to do, because now you're adding another 18 months onto that body. I think you want Zlatan Ibrahimovic as soon as possible, because he's going to be coming off the European Championships. And I do understand if it is the LA Galaxy and they can't find a way, he comes at the start of 2017. I mean, if you're asking me my opinion, that's the only way I would do that, or the latest I would do that. So LAFC to me seems like a long shot, but then I could be wrong on that. Atlanta, I'm sure they're doing their due diligence and looking at that. How do you make a splash? They play on turf. I'm sure that's going to be a huge factor for Zlatan and what he decides there. So I think there's multiple ways of doing this, and I think this discussion, like Matt said, I think we're in the second chapter of what could be a 10-chapter book here.
I got a couple of questions then. Now, one of it is kind of a digression, but there have been rumors that Sevilla are interested in Gio Dos Santos for this summer. A, is there anything to that? Because that would obviously open up a DP slot for the Galaxy. And then the other question is, you said that Zlatan Ibrahimovic would not go through the discovery process. So how does he get into MLS? How does he end up with Team A or Team B? And how does that compare to the Drogba thing last year when Chicago supposedly had a claim on him, but then he ended up in Montreal and the Impact had to compensate?
It was more of a tongue-in-cheek comment of saying, how do you quote-unquote discover Messi, Ronaldo, Zlatan? The discovery rights process, it's so convoluted, but the reality is Zlatan would go through as a discovery process. But what we know from the Drogba situation is that if there are two teams seriously in that discussion of signing the player to his market value, which Chicago was, then you have to go through this discovery rights issue. Everyone's talking about the Philadelphia Union, so let's use the Union for example. If the Union cannot even have a discussion with Zlatan Ibrahimovic about his contract and about his market value, then, guys, they lose that quote-unquote discovery right priority. Does that make any sense?
So yeah, it matters if the player has any interest in going.
Well, not necessarily. It matters if the team wants that player. So if the Philadelphia Union will talk to Zlatan, and Zlatan says, I want $40 million a year for 3 years, and Philly says, well, we'll offer you 30 to 35 or close to the 40, they're in that discussion. Well, then they've entered the process of that discovery right. And that's why this thing is so crazy, because you can't just write a name on the piece of paper and not be interested. The Revolution got money for Sebastian Lletget last year because they were willing to pay Sebastian Lletget's contract. Sebastian Legette says, I want to go to L.A., well, guess what? New England does get something for him because they were in that discussion. That's the best way I can describe this. And what I said on our show, Philadelphia is not getting any compensation. You can read into that however you want, but that is the way I have heard it from league sources and from people in close. Now, to go back to the Giovanni Dos Santos, Matt, I have heard absolutely nothing from the L.A. camp, from Giovanni Dos Santos' representatives, that he has any interest of leaving Los Angeles, especially if he's named to the Mexico Copa America roster. Because if he's named to the Copa America roster for Mexico for Osorio, then it's confirmation to Giovanni Dos Santos he's made the right move for his international career. It's confirmation to Mexico, blah, 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 blah. I don't see him moving, and I honestly don't see Steven Gerrard moving until the end of the year. Robbie Keane's the interesting one. I don't know what they do with Robbie Keane. I don't know if Robbie Keane wants to retire at the end of the year. But the fact that this discussion with Zlatan is happening now tells me that Robbie Keane, this may be Robbie Keane's last year in MLS.
Well, one guy who has moved, and you talked to him just a few days ago, Kai Kamara, going from Columbus to New England. And we're going to talk about Kai in a second. But first, let's talk about what happens to Crew SC. Because they lost their MVP from last year. They lost their leading goal scorer. They get a 1-1 tie this week. But what can they do to fill that spot? They got a lot of money for Kai. How do they go about replacing him?
I think you've got a situation where the coach is the technical director. And so Greg Berhalter, I don't think, will be quick to spend that money, because I actually believe in his mind there's a couple areas on that team they need to fill. And I don't know if he's completely convinced that it's just a number nine. Now, do I think they go out and do that? Yeah, I do. But I'm not sure they go out and spend the $500,000 plus of allocation money, in, you know, targeted in general, however they got it. I don't know if they go out and do all of that on a number nine. I'm not positive on that. In watching that team play this year, I think they're assessing the team where it is, particularly between the years, of whether or not this locker room is strong enough, whether or not this team is strong enough to get after it. It's been a difficult year, no doubt about it. You can't slice it any other way for Columbus. It has been a difficult, disappointing start to the year, but how often have we seen teams kind of go through this in May and then all of a sudden maybe a player comes in June or July and the team starts going again? I think of the Revolution in 2014 with Jermaine Jones. I'm not writing off Columbus at all, but I do think they've got a huge hole to fill.
The body language has been bad for them. And usually when we see teams bring back the whole group, it kind of enhances the chemistry, but that doesn't appear to be the case for Columbus this season. Has the message from Greg Berhalter worn thin with these guys?
Matt, it's an interesting point, because I would also I'm surprised a little bit of the Portland Timbers as well. I you know, you bring back their core group of players, and I'm not saying their body language in Portland's been bad, because I do think the body language in Columbus has definitely been a different body language of last year. I don't know what the answer is in Columbus. Playing with Greg, knowing Greg for however long I have. Listen, he's an authoritative figure. You know, he is the alpha dog in that room. He is the leader, and I don't think it's fallen on deaf ears. I don't. I'm not sure that locker room, coach or not coach, I don't care who the coach is, to be quite honest with you guys, has fully gotten over the way they lost MLS Cup at home. And I say that because just from experience and knowing. If you have a tight locker room and you've got a goalkeeper like Steve Clark that made a mistake like he did in the final, I would love to know from Columbus players, have you guys made fun of Steve Clark? Have you made fun of him? Have you gotten over it? Because to me, the one thing that stood out about the Kai Kamara Higuain stuff was Kai bringing up last year. So to me, they haven't gotten over it. Whether it's Kai Kamara not winning MVP or the Golden Boot, has Steve Clark gotten over his mistake? Has Tony Chani gotten over the fact he didn't play until the whistle was blown? So I don't know. In my stance, I still stay with it. If two players like that can single-handedly lose you a game when you're up 4-1 at home with 30-plus minutes, I think that's more of a sign on that locker room than it is those two guys. And I've been in locker rooms where two guys have gotten after it, fist fights, whatever it is. You don't lose the game. That's off the field. You figure it out in the locker room. That happens. You do not lose when you're up 4-1. You do not lose those 3 points. And they did. That's remarkable to me.
And that was, I think, a little bit of Kai's point, right, coming out of that was you have arguments and fights with teammates all the time. So it must have been something bigger than just that little argument that could have caused, you know, what it ended up as.
Yeah, but I don't think Kai, and I think this was very evident in the interview, is I don't think Kai completely sit there and say he's innocent as well, though. Because any player that, if you talk to any player and say, since 2006, you've moved 7 times to 6 different clubs, there's obviously something there. Now, Kai will say differently, and I get that. But I also do think where there's smoke, there's fire. So I think Kai understands that. I saw it in his eyes, talking to him, obviously having his conversation that he had with Jay Heaps. I think he looks at it, and he's got something to prove. His heart's broken not being in Columbus. But, guys, he's moved 7 times.
There definitely is something there. That said, he looked like a pretty snug fit for New England in his debut this past weekend. Didn't get a goal, but I think he's kind of in the right situation for him right there. It seems like everything's going to run through him.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it makes Lee Wynn, Kellen Rowe, Diego Fagundes, Juan Agudelo, Teo Bunbury all more effective. Charlie Davies, if he comes in and you play with two up front, even with Kai, it's just going to make them more effective. I've always said this about New England. They're 2 players away from being arguably the best team in the league. And we saw it a little bit in 2014 when you saw Jermaine Jones come in. How about that run they go on? I don't think the Kai Kamara effect is going to be not far off from that. I really believe that just his presence on the field. Now, does it address their issues of defending from open play and that kind of stuff? No. But sometimes part of your defensive issues is because you're not really a threat on the other end. They're a threat now, and they're a real threat. And you already saw it. Yes, it's against a weak Chicago Fire team, but Lee Wynn was more active, and I think that's going to be interesting. Plus, you guys are talking about a guy that has a huge chip on his shoulder in the Eastern Conference to score 20 goals again this year and to prove it to Anthony Precourt and the Columbus Crew that they made a mistake.
You named a lot of attackers, though, around him. There's only so many spots on the field. There's only one ball. Do you expect a lot of that to stay together, or is New England this the start of a few moves to head towards
like the
MLS Cup?
I feel like the clock is ticking already on New England's chemistry. For exactly that reason.
Yeah, well, I think that's why they made the move. I think this is and I don't think Jay Heaps or Mike Burns would argue anything against this. I think this was the last move. I think they were very active. I know they were very active coming up this summer looking for a new designated player, and the players they were looking at were number 9s. They were looking at center forward, so I completely agree with you guys. Is it the last move for this group? I believe so, because at some point, if you're not getting 10 to 14 goals a year from Juan Agudelo, if Kellen Rowe, what's his position? Teo Bunbury, of course. But in saying all of that, there's a byproduct of this. Last weekend, Kellen Rowe played right back. Who knows? Maybe Jay Heaps and Tommy Soane say Kellen Rowe's going to be our right back for the rest of the year. I do believe that this is a move for that group of 5 to 6 attackers. This is a last run, because in my mind, if you've got a defensive problem, why would you hold on to one of those assets if you can't get rid of one of them to shore up your back line?
Let's talk about moves, though. We had you on right after MLS draft, and we tried to talk about the Rapids, and it was basically a conversation about confusion and chaos, and now they're the number one team in MLS. What happened, Taylor? I mean, can you put your finger on this?
No, I can't. And I watch the games every weekend, and I've got one eye covered going, looking at it, thinking, how did this happen? How quickly did this just change? The one thing about Colorado under Pablo is defensively, they've always been solid. They've had a good understanding. They've a good foundation. And they've made a ton of moves. You know, is it the effect of Jermaine Jones? you can't say it's not, because now this is the second team he goes into, and the mentality completely changes.
But they were getting results before he came back.
Yeah, I'm not. You're going to have a tough time convincing me on that, because I called two of their games. They were on a, you know, Zach McMath making mistakes. They were living on an edge a little bit. Those are results that could have gone either way. Now the results, I'm saying, wait a minute. I just think Jermaine Jones completes everyone around him. Nagashi's a much better player. They didn't have him on the roster. Marco Papa's been injured, but early on the year he scored a couple goals. You know, you've got that kind of stuff. I think Michael Azira could arguably be the best pickup of the year. You know, he's been great for Colorado. So, but you're asking me to talk about him, and I'm still sitting here thinking, what? I didn't think we were talking about them. And now, ultimately, we're going to be calling them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they have basically punched their ticket by this point. They're halfway there with, what, 24 points after 11 games or 12 games, is it? They are the surprise team this year. Jermaine Jones has been fantastic since he has gotten back from suspension. Going to play a big role this summer at Copa America. A guy who will not be playing a big role at Copa America, Jozy Altidore. Limped off injured with another hamstring pull. Kurt Larson of the Ottawa Sun reporting 6 to 8 weeks out. And that's it, Taylor. He's done. He won't be wearing red, white, and blue this summer.
Yeah, listen, you guys have – I know Matt and I have exchanged texts throughout the year. What I see from Jozy Altidore is there's something off between the years. He came into January camp. He looked fit, lost weight, and pulls his hamstring in the preseason with Toronto. Now the season starts off, and it's weird. And I do think there's this weird component of Javinko's there, so now Jozy looks at it. I just, guys, it's between the years. I don't know how to describe it, but when you talk to every ex-player that I've talked to about Jozy Altidore and the run that he's on over the last 2 years, or quite honestly since the World Cup in Brazil, we all just shrug our shoulders and say, yeah, we kind of know it. Like, there's just something off. It's between the ears. He's not confident. He takes a penalty. On the penalty, if you watch a replay, and I've watched it 3 times, he actually starts kicking the bottom of his heel. He pulled his hamstring on it. He literally pulled that hamstring, tweaked it on that penalty. But then for it to be 6 to 8 weeks, now here we go, I'm playing doctor, that's not just a tweak, guys. That's a full pull. So I don't know how to put it into words. It's disappointing to say the least, because, again, as an ex-player, Josie's looking for answers now. Now he's got to be wondering, is this the way it's going to be for the rest of, you know, his career? And I felt this World Cup qualifying cycle, this Copa America, you know, Mark Connolly at ESPN, he's our editor and he's always with us at every trip. He raised a great question. If Jozy Altidore never plays with the national team again, would you list him in the top 5 national team forwards in the history? I think that's a phenomenal question.
Yeah, he's
and
already
that's something that's, you know, I think his legacy was yet to be determined, and I thought this World Cup qualifying cycle with the leadership of Michael Bradley and under this Jurgen Klinsmann's second tenure, I felt like Jozy was really going to stamp and put himself into the elite group, and his numbers show it. I get that. It'd be remarkable to think that a Jozy Altidore never scored in a World Cup and had an impact.
Now let's take it away from him, though. Let's go to the squad, because this was, I think people were starting to get excited. You have Pulisic scoring, you have Zardes playing well. I think people were starting to come around to the fact that this could be a pretty strong, I don't know, decent squad going to this tournament. I mean, how do they recover now? What style do they play? Does Bobby Wood jump right in for him? They're not the same player. What do you expect to see?
Well, I think with Jozy and Clint Dempsey on the roster, if that's the way it was going to go when everyone's fully healthy, you can't play both of them together. So 4-4-2 doesn't work. And so now when you play a 4-2-3-1 2-3-1, you definitely can't play both of them. So, and that's from Jurgen. That's not my decision. That's not my opinion. That's talking to Jurgen. He just believed he couldn't play both of them together if it's that 4-2-3-1 you saw against Guatemala. And listen, you guys know, I mean, I make it known on the broadcast, I think that's the strongest formation. For whatever reason, the United States under Klinsmann have looked the best when they're playing that style of play. Now with no Josie, I don't think they have any other choice, because Bobby Wood can play high. He can also play wide if you need him to be, even though that's not his strong suit. But throughout the years, I've always thought 4-2-3-1, and Jurgen comes out and plays a diamond in the midfield. And then I thought a diamond in the midfield was coming, and then he plays a flat 4-4-2 in Guatemala with Mick Diskerud and Michael Bradley in the midfield. So you're always left kind of wondering and guessing what he's going to do. I think with Josie gone, do I think it kills the roster? Not necessarily, because I believe Copa America – see, here's the thing. It's not the Gold Cup, and it's not World Cup qualifying. So I actually believe it should be more young players than older players, so we get answers. I want to see Nagby play every single minute. I want to see more of Lee Wynn. I want to get answers. I want to see Matt Miazga. I know the fans are going to disagree with me. I know Jurgen Klinsmann would disagree with me. But you need to get answers now, because come 2018, when Russia's around, and even World Cup qualifying, you need to have a younger national team at the World Cup. If the United States is ever going to progress at the international stage, they cannot go to World Cups with Brad Davis, Chris Wondolowski, Kyle Beckerman, Jermaine Jones. You go up and down the list where everyone's first World Cup, they're over the age of 30. Everywhere else in the world, the first World Cup, 25, 26. So now you're getting those players with experience are getting two World Cups in the prime of their career. I would like to see Jurgen go with a you could say inexperienced, but a younger team in this Copa America, and let's see what they got.
I just want to add to Taylor's point right there. The last five official games for the U.S., we start out in four different formations. So Jurgen does need to settle on a formation and an approach. And regarding the age thing, are you convinced at this point that Clint Dempsey is a lock to make the roster this summer?
I do think Clint Dempsey is. Yeah, I do. I think the way Jurgen looks at it, I think Jurgen looks at his forward options and looks at it as very grim and looks at it and says he has very few options. So I do think Clint Dempsey will be on that roster. After that, I'm not sure. And I think Father Time is knocking on the door. I think Clint Dempsey in behind the scenes would even tell you that. And remember, after the World Cup, Clint Dempsey said, my goal is to get to Copa America and then we'll see. And I do think he'll be on the roster. Now, whether or not he plays a major impact at Copa America, Matt, I don't know that answer.
Do you really think that the striker pool is grim for the U.S. right now? Because Bobby Wood just secured a move to a pretty decent sized Bundesliga club. Jossi Zardes is pretty clearly playing the best soccer of his life. Jordan Morris is scoring as a 21-year-old rookie. CJ Sapong, I know, didn't make this 40-man preliminary roster, but he's playing as well as any hold-up man in MLS. So it seems that it's not grim. It seems like it's actually as deep a pool as I can remember.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll disagree with you on that one. I'm not going to say grim, but I will say uncertain. I think the forward pool is very uncertain, and I don't think you can even argue the other way. And put it this way, 10 years ago, the center forward pool was Brian McBride, Josh Wolf, Eddie Johnson, Landon Donovan, Brian Ching, Clint Mathis at some point, but he was pretty much done at that point. You threw myself in there. I'm just saying, like, there was Connor Casey was another one. Edson Buttle was another one. Tell me right now, Josie goes down and we're still talking about this. 10 years ago, if Josie went down, you still have a viable replacement.
But isn't that because of style, Taylor? That they're all similar styles, not purely because of quality? I mean, the guys that all those guys play in a similar way. So if McBride had gone down, Ching could have stepped in. But in terms of quality, I mean, the way Bobby Wood's playing and the way Zardes and Morris has shown, show that they can score goals at a high level.
Yeah, I'm not, and you guys know I'm not sold on Zardes yet. And what I've seen, and even talking to the LA coaching staff and talking to players around him, Zardes needs to take the next step. Does Zardes belong in the national team? 100%. But any touch inside the 18, his first touch lets him down still. So at the international level,
so
where everything
lucky, Taylor. He has the luckiest. He has the luckiest first touch in the history of soccer.
Yes.
It bounces off his rear end, and he gets an assist.
Yes, exactly. Part of me is jealous. I had like four assists my entire career because mine would bounce off my shin and go out of bounds. I totally get that. But I don't know if we need to beat Mexico tomorrow. If the United States needs to beat Mexico tomorrow, and Jozy Altidore is not healthy. You guys are 100% confident in the forward options?
No.
I'm okay with Bobby Wood starting. I'm 100% okay. And if he gets hurt, I mean, at some point, Jossy or Jordan Morris or Chris Wondolowski or someone like that has to earn the spot. So I'm actually okay with the forward options.
Taylor, let's talk about someone else, though, that we want to take a step, because you have Heineken Rivalry Week on Sunday. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Cascadia Cup, Portland hosting Vancouver. You mentioned you wanted to see Nagby get minutes. They lost again yesterday at home to NYCFC. That's three straight losses, first time in Porter's career. I mean, are Portland fans worried? Is there a chance that both MLS Cup finalists from last year don't make the postseason this year?
I think I do believe, only because the Western Conference is so, so strong. I do think Portland knows it too. Some people tweeted me, they laughed when I said it's a must-win game for Peter Vermees at home in May. Even Peter Vermees looked at me and said, it's not a must-win, Taylor, but look at how difficult the Western Conference is set up. I think the surprising thing for me, and listen, in fairness to Portland, that was a handball on RJ Allen, right? So these are breaks that happen, right? So these breaks go both ways. You know, you look at Sporting Kansas City was winless in seven. They should have had a penalty and a red card in the San Jose game. So this happens, and I get it. I say that so Timbers Army doesn't kill me on Twitter here. But there's a huge but. They give up a ton of goals. So a team that was built on defensive, their mentality last year, which ultimately I believe got them to MLS Cup, because once they made the switch to Nagby in the middle, it all came together quickly. They just, they're giving up way too many goals. You know, you look at Tommy McNamara's goal, that's a great finish. I get all that. You are 22 yards from the opposition goal, and it's just too late from Jack Jewsbury and Nat Borges to recognize and put pressure on the ball. There's just certain things going on with Portland this year that have not gone on, or especially under Caleb Porter. And you can tell from Caleb Porter, it's a pressing issue. And now you've got Vancouver coming to town where they're on fire. They've turned it around a little bit. It's a massive game this weekend, a massive game in the Western Conference.
Part of the turnaround is Kakuta Mane's play. He was probably the best player this past weekend, and he just absolutely tore up the Toronto back line. Given how much Portland's fullbacks have struggled, you have to think that's where the focus is going to be.
And by the way, I changed my tone if Kakuta Mane can wear red, white, and blue here. I changed my tone on forward options if he's available. I mean, this is a kid that can single-handedly open up the game with one movement of the ball, a run over the top. But the only thing that I have with Kakuta Mane's game is, can he be more consistent? Why throughout his career, and yes, he's still young, he's very streaky, where he'll go four, five, six games without a goal or an assist. But he's got those qualities that it's just, you can't teach. He can absolutely open the game up with his legs. He's got a very good touch. And then when you score two goals against your rival in Toronto, their first win at BMO Field, and you're a huge part of that, that only gives him confidence. Matt, I think you hit the nail on the head, my man. I think Kakuta Mane will be giving Caleb Porter some headaches all week long.
Taylor, your best guess, 2018 World Cup, the U.S. qualifies, let's say. Is Kakuta Mane on that roster for the U.S. national team?
I would be – listen, if he gets his passport, I think he gets a real run. If he gets his passport in time, I think he gets a real, real good look from Jurgen Klinsmann, because the one thing I've learned from Jurgen Klinsmann – is that at the international level, and remember, guys, the 2014 World Cup, we were all shocked. DeAndre Yedlin came out of nowhere. And even after the World Cup, Jurgen said, I should have brought Jordan Morse. And what he does at these international tournaments is he loves players that can absolutely get after it speed-wise with pace. And if Kakuta Mene can play for the United States, honestly, I would be shocked if he is not given a real good look before that 18 World Cup.
It's going to be a fun one to watch this Sunday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time, Heineken Rivalry Week. The Portland Timbers, Vancouver Whitecaps in this Cascadia matchup. You can catch Taylor on that one, as well as this summer coming up all the MLS action and international action. Taylor, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
No problem, boys. Good talking to you.
Thanks so much, Taylor Twellman, for taking the time to talk to us. Well, let's move on because there was plenty of other action this weekend in MLS, and we're going to talk all about it in the second segment.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Putting on the Ritz. Different types wear a day coat.
I would be happy to not come in on this one and just let that ride. Sounds so much better than we will over the next few minutes. David Gossett, Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst back here. We talked to Taylor Twellman already. We hit a lot of the MLS weekend, but there's still more to discuss. We actually did not discuss the game that Taylor called on ESPN, and that was Sporting KC getting a 2-1 win at home against Orlando City. But this was one of the most bizarre games I've ever seen, Matt. KC had 29 shots before they scored a goal. 34 shots total in the game. They finally get the breakthrough on a little knockaround. Jacob Peterson basically had to come off the bench and save Sporting Kansas City. What do you see with this team?
The same thing that I've seen all year. They need one of their wingers to do what Jacob Peterson did in this game, which is get off the ball, get away from the ball, and offer direct north-south penetration into the box. Act like a second forward in the final third, as opposed to a second or third or fourth playmaker. If you look at the way their wingers play, Brad Davis and Graham Zusi, Justin Mapp, when he's been in there as well, they all want to come to the ball. They don't want to stretch the field. And it's nice to have that kind of skill, but the game is about creating space one way or another. Peterson created space in a different type of way, and that's why suddenly the floodgates sort of came open right there.
So two teams coming into this game, decent expectations, I think, coming to the season. KC obviously was on this 7-game winless streak, but Orlando has their own issues. They get an own goal in this one. They give up a lot of goals just in general throughout the season. Adrian Heath was suspended for this one, so he wasn't on the sideline. Which of these two teams do you worry about more this season?
I think it's Orlando City, because I think that the good work they did in the second half of the last season came undone in the postseason with messing around with the front office and frankly acquiring Nocerino. That really has messed up the chemistry in the midfield, and they seem almost compelled to play him at the expense of Aaron Winter or Adrian Winter, sorry, or Carlos Rivas, and I think they need those pure attackers, those guys who play at a higher tempo and can stretch the field to be out there in order to be efficient. So I think that the pieces don't fit in Orlando City.
Now, the one thing we said about Orlando was, well, they had an established club, they had, you know, the front office, they had the coaching staff set. NYCFC on the other side had to put everything together on the fly. It clearly didn't work in the first year. A lot of changes. You came on this show, Matt, and you guaranteed they wouldn't make the postseason. And they have now won 3 games in a row, including on the road at Portland this weekend. Now, you might be the wrong person to ask this because you might be biased. Was this a couple lucky bounces, or does this team have an identity? Are they starting to figure things out?
Well, I mean, they clearly have an identity, and the attacking sort of synergy between Villa and McNamara and Shelton is verging upon special at this point. They seem to really work well together. But look, right now they are where they are because they have a winning record on the road. They're 3-2-0 on the road. That's not going to continue.
Whoa, Matt.
It's absolutely not going to continue. And again, I'm going to die on this hill. This is where it happens. So, you know, they're on the road again on Wednesday at Toronto FC. Then they come home for Heineken Rivalry Week against the Red Bulls. if they get 3 points out of these next two games, then okay. But if they get less than that, I'm still up on that hill. Regardless, I'm still up on that hill.
So let's talk about Toronto a little. They lost that 4-3 game at home against Vancouver. Josie, we already mentioned, out 6 to 8 weeks, so that's something they're going to have to deal with. But is there a worry for TFC without Josie? I mean, Javinko's the one. Is it possible that Javinko can score every goal for a team that ends up being successful in MLS?
Yeah, I don't think that is sustainable. At some point, he's going to pick up an injury and miss a couple of weeks. But I do think that this weekend, notwithstanding, Toronto FC have the defensive lineup and sort of approach where they could win a couple of games 1-0 off of set pieces. That said, TFC's roster is still not complete. They clearly do not have a backup number 9. They clearly have, you know, one or two too many central defenders, and I think that they lack a little bit of speed coming out of midfield as well. So we might see this team making some moves when the window opens again in July.
Sounds like New England and TFC might be a match made in heaven between center backs and a glut of forwards.
That's a good point. I mean, if they could pry Juan Agudelo away, they would do that in a heartbeat. The other guy might be Patrick Mullins, who isn't even making the game day roster for Toronto FC. He's a trade chip that I know a lot of teams in the league like quite a bit.
So a guy that we both like is Steven Betashore. We think he's a solid player. What is he doing, though, on Kakuta Mane's goal? He slides in 18 yards away with three defenders. Like, what is that?
He looked like a marionette who got his strings cut. It was bad. It was easily his worst game of the year. And look, Mane could do that to you. He's just such a dynamic one versus one presence. You know, Taylor mentioned the speed and the ability with the ball, but it needs to be said, he gets his shot away so quickly and he hits it hard. He has got a good quick shot. I think that separates him from a guy like Fabian Castillo and Ethan Finlay, who are both international caliber players. I think Mane can be better than that.
Well, if Vancouver fans aren't excited enough about Kakuta Mane, Alphonso Davies at 15 years old gets a goal for Vancouver Whitecaps FC2 this weekend, the youngest score in USL history. So just in case you need more to be excited about, now on the flip side from excitement is whatever it is New York Red Bulls fans are feeling right now, Doyle. 2-0 loss on the road against their rival DC on Friday night. But the one comment that I heard from every Red Bull fan that I talked to was just, it felt like to them a lack of effort. It felt like their team didn't show up. Is it frustration?
I don't think it's a lack. I didn't see a lack of effort. And I know that a lot of the guys took to Twitter afterwards to send their apologies to the fan. And Jesse Marsh was very contrite afterwards. But that didn't look like a lack of effort. It looked like a team that was a little bit confused and not on the same page. And again, look, if you lose a Chelsea caliber central defender and his veteran partner, it's going to have a knock on effect throughout the squad. And that continues to be the case for the Red Bulls. And I mean, it seems like Chicago at home on Wednesday is just what the doctor ordered. But this is the literal definition of a trap game.
Yeah,
it's a game you overlook ahead of against a bad team, with all apologies to the Fire, but they're not a good team right now. It's a game you overlook ahead of the rivalry game at the weekend. And the Red Bulls cannot afford to overlook it, and they cannot, given that they're 0-5-1 on the road, they cannot afford to drop home points.
So Gideon Ba made the bench in this one, didn't play, should be back over the next few games. Gonzalo Verón gets the start. We've seen him play before. We kind of know what type of player he is. I mean, is that any sort of antidote for this team, or is it a central defensive issue no matter who they're playing in the front four or five positions?
To me, it's a central defensive issue and a finishing issue. They have had looks. Bradley Wright Phillips has had the same looks that he's buried the last 2 years, and he's just not turning them into goals this year. So obviously that magnifies the defensive issues as well.
So MLS Live, it's going to be fun on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time on MLS Live and TSN 4. TFC hosting NYCFC, and as you mentioned, New York Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on MLS Live against the Chicago Fire this Wednesday. Those are two pretty fun matchups heading into Heineken Rivalry Week, of course, on the Big Fox on Saturday. Those two teams will face off in what is now the New York City Derby. I will be there, of course, as a fan. It should be a good time.
Is that what the fans have officially called it?
No, I could not remember the moment. Is it the Hudson River?
I don't know whether it's the Hudson River or the New York City. I don't know if Red Bulls fans are willing to call it a derby, because I think there's a lot of them who insist that it's not actually a rivalry until NYCFC actually win a game.
They might be stoking flames right now. NYCFC on this 3-game win streak. I mean, we'll see what happens. One last game I want to hit, though, from the weekend. Montreal, Philadelphia, two teams that were leading the East. They tie 1-1 in Montreal. Drogba gets a goal but goes off with a slight injury. I got to ask you this question. Montreal looked like the best team in Major League Soccer over the first few weeks of the season. They've played well but have not looked like that since then. Are they a worse team with Didier Drogba?
No.
that was a quick answer.
They're absolutely not. But they're missing some components who were a big part of that opening. Donny Toya was great the first month of the season, and he's been injured, I think, for about 4 weeks now. Eric Alexander was fantastic that first month, and he's been injured as well. So that hurts. And they've changed things up a little bit to accommodate Drogba, and I don't think their defensive repressure is happening quite as quickly as it did, but this is still a team that I think is you know, top three in the East on talent, and they're still top of the East on points right now as well. So no reason to panic or question Didier freaking Drogba. I suspect that the Impact will figure it out sooner rather than later.
I definitely won't die on that hill. But one last name I do want to bring up, FC Dallas 2-0 win over Seattle. They rebound to a rocky spell a little bit. Michael Barrios gets the goal, the second goal of the game. I said he was the most underrated player in MLS, I do believe, a couple weeks ago, but we can let that one fly. You know, we don't need anyone going back and researching that unless they want to. But he's been phenomenal for them. Castillo's kind of in a slump, and he, Diaz coming back. Aruti hasn't scored, and yet FC Dallas continues to look like one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had that 3-game losing streak going into last week where they hadn't scored in any of them, and then they got 6 points. Comeback win over Portland, and then I think a pretty thoroughly, I'm not going to say dominant, but convincing win over Seattle. Barrios was a big part of both of those games. Even when he's not scoring, he puts pressure on with those Ethan Finlay-style runs where he comes in a little tighter than you expect from a winger and actually acts as a second forward. And just look, sometimes it's a simple game, and sometimes it's just a matter of, can you get more guys into the box? Instead of just one guy, can you get two? Now can you get three? Can you play the ball from a little bit higher? And over the last 180 minutes, suddenly the answers to all those questions for FC Dallas have been yes.
Well, let's head to the mailbag, and we have a few questions from our fans for a Mr. Doyle about maybe locking in some teams. He's already knocked NYCFC out of the playoffs. Can he lock in any other teams so early in the season? We'll be back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
The lights are shining like the sun out tonight. Just keep your body moving how I
like. A little bit of that to get Doyle excited as we head into the mailbag. And we are going to start doing something every week here on Extra Time Radio. We're going to be announcing the winners of our fantasy league per week. We are going to be giving away some awards or some swag from the MLS store. And this week, our winners were Perez for president, Alex Carey, with 161 points, as well as Josh Daniels and Jeffrey Rowland, who tied at 154 points. Josh Daniels' team name is Party at the Fubar, and Jeffrey Rowland's name is Jeffrey Ty Daniels. So, Doyle, I don't know if you have a team name award there for those three?
I don't. I guess I'll go with Party at the Fubar.
Okay.
Because I think he's at least trying something there. The other ones don't do much for me at all.
It's a little. It's do more, do less, do more. Let's talk playoffs, though. I said it. You already knocked NYCFC out. We appreciate that. We have Renee, who's a longtime first time, which is like my favorite thing in the world. With one third of the MLS season in the books, which two teams from each conference are you locking in for the playoffs? He said which ones are out, but you already said that. So which two teams can you lock in right now?
I think that Montreal and Toronto are in the East. I think Toronto, even though they had that slip up this past week, just have too many weapons and too many road points already. And Montreal, I think they have probably the most talented attack and balanced attack in the East. And I think that should be enough to get them through. So that's the East. In the West, I mean, it's the two teams at the top. It's Colorado and FC Dallas. I can't believe it with Colorado, but it's you can't deny what you're seeing week after week after week. Now, I don't think they're going to be one of the top teams by the, you know, when it's all said and done, but they're making the playoffs, folks. There's no longer any question in my mind.
Now, LA, more points per game right now than FC Dallas, but you think FC Dallas is the safer bet?
Yeah, just because LA have so many older injury prone guys, and you know that Zardes is going to be gone for a month and a half as well. And look, LA's defense has concerned me at times. It has absolutely looked porous in a way that they haven't been in the past, and you can't say that about the Rapids.
Let's move on. Harrison Crow tweeted us, and he said, can you give us a scouting report on former homegrown player for New York Red Bulls, Amando Moreno? Now, the reason he asked that is because Moreno was one of seven young players called up to train with the U.S. national team over the next week and then play on Sunday in Puerto Rico against the Puerto Rican national team, the first of three warm-up games for Copa America. The other six players named in that, Emerson Heineman, Julian Green, Paul Areola, Zach Steffen, Caleb Stanko. Of those seven, oh, and Fafa Pico, of course, who's been scoring at St. Pauli. We've never seen him with the U.S. national team before. Of those seven guys, let's move away from Moreno. Which of them excites you the most? You think will be a factor with the national team? You looking forward to maybe seeing play on Sunday?
I think the long-term answer is probably Emerson Heineman, who is leaving Fulham this summer and has a whole host of teams in Europe and, from what I've heard, MLS targeting him. But the intriguing one is Fafa Pico. He's Manhattan-born to Haitian parents. He spent his youth years in Syria A, and well, in the academy team for I forget which Syria A club it was, but and now he's playing and scoring in the two Bundesliga, which is a good level. He's 25. He's a more of a winger than a true forward. And he has, yes, the option to play for Haiti. So this is a good proactive move from Jurgen Klinsmann. And Pico, definitely, I think, the one to keep an eye on in this game against Puerto Rico.
That Klinsmann guy, he's always got a plan. He's seven steps ahead. He's a chess player through and through. Well, we are excited to see it. The first U.S. national team game just this Sunday. But before that, we have MLS Live this week. Wednesday night, those two games, the New York teams against Toronto and Chicago, and then Heineken Rivalry Week coming up next weekend. We'll have all of your previews on Thursday. Andrew Wiebe, thankfully, will be back, but Doyle, thanks so much for spending the time with me. We thank Taylor Twellman as well for coming on to talk to us, and have a good week.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.